Welcome to another episode of Scoliologs from the Scoliosis Research Society. This is Terry Ishmael from the Philadelphia Shriners Hospital for Children and my co-host, Dr. John Voorhees from Stanford. Today, we're excited to have with us the winners of the HIBSS Best Clinical Research Paper from the SRS annual meeting this year, Drs. Javier Pizones and Dr. Francisco Sanchez, both from Spain. The title of their paper is The Reunion with My Patients, Their Journey and Experience 30 years after their intervention for adolescent idiopathic scoliosis via Cottrell-Dubosse instrumentation. Welcome, gentlemen, and thanks for taking the time out from your Sunday to be with us.
Thank you very much. A pleasure to be here with you.
Awesome. Well, I wonder if we could start out by just having you you two introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about your practice and where you're from.
Paco, want to go ahead with that one first?
Oh, sorry, I can't hear anything.
Okay, oh, apologies.
I'll introduce both of us, maybe. So Paco is my mentor. We both worked in La Paz in Madrid, and he's retired already from clinical practice, but has been engaged in research, has been called as an emeritus researcher for the last 5 years in the hospital. I'm currently an attending spine surgeon, orthopedic, both of us, in Madrid, Spain.
Fantastic.
That's great.
So, Dr. Sanchez, you know, we just discussed it a little bit offline, but, you know, can you tell us a little bit about this project and, you know, kind of start from, you know, how you figured out who you were going to talk to and how did you reach out to them, et cetera?
Oh, as I told you earlier, I was involved in a larger project with Barcelona team, and one of the parties was just to figure out the patient that can be involved in this project, and I had to, because I have enough time because I was appointed to emeritus in my hospital. So I had enough time just to trace them. And surprisingly enough, I found a lot of them. And the different part of them, of the main project, was my conversation, that my private conversation that I had with 100 of them. And this is the basis of this award that has been awarded by the SRS. Just to get in touch with them and talk to them, listen to them, and try to catch their feelings and experiences that they had during this long-term period, it's over 30 years. And it was hard because it was down during the pandemic time, and it was difficult for me or even for the patient just to reach the hospital and get ready just to obtain x-rays or MRIs or other things from them. But successfully enough, we got it, and we are very proud of that.
And so just maybe to provide a little background for those of the listeners and viewers who haven't heard the whole talk or read everything about it, this was a report that you gave of a series of unstructured interviews that you performed on patients who had AIS that had spinal fusion with CD instrumentation about 30 years ago, or greater than 30 years ago. Is that right?
Right.
Yeah. That's so really
minimum,
fantastic.
The minimum was 26 years follow-up, and the maximum was, so the first surgery on them was down in 1985. So it's 36, 37 years, from 26 to 37. So the mean age follow-up was near 31 years.
Did this describe your learning curve as you began to use this instrumentation, transitioning from other methods of spinal fusion?
Yeah, let me tell you that at that time when the CD instrumentation came up, it was a very revolutionary times, and all the, especially the young sergeants at that time were very enthusiastic about it, because it was like a revolution, not only for us but also for the patients, but because for the first time they didn't need any rest, any breaks after surgery. So they could get up 3 days after surgery like nowadays, and at that time in the mid 80s, it, believe me, it was a revolution for them. So being able just to meet them again 30 years later, it was a priceless experience to me, and listen to them and recording what they say, it was unbelievable. I think that it was a very difficult task to do, and I had to thanks to my hospital by appointing me for my emeritus position, and also despite the fact that there were hard times because of the pandemic, we were able just to meet the patients and to ask for different tests, and the final results was very, very successful. Yeah. So what you say that it's been representing me a learning curve. I would say that it represented me like a learning curve in my professional life. So being able just to meet those patients that they were operating in the adolescent age by a very motivated sergeant, young sergeant like me in those days, and be able just to meet them again 30 years later, it's been, you can understand, this is a priceless experience. And the information I received from them is worth a lot for me.
Was there anything surprising that you learned when talking to them? Did they remember the things that you expected that they would, or was it surprising?
Well, in some cases, it surprised me, because even though most of the patients are happy with the results, I found a few of them that were really angry, very upset with the results, and they told me that we changed their life for worse. And that's this part of the interviews was what surprised me. Yeah.
How they say that things had changed for the worse? Did they have a lot of pain afterwards, or they thought that they were going to be a little straighter than they turned out to be?
Well, I can jump to that one.
Sure.
Mainly patients, most of the patients, almost 70% of them, were really satisfied with the surgical treatment. They had very bad memories of the conservative treatment itself. So bracing, casting, nighttime traction at that time was used. And it was used for so many years. At that time, we started at the age 10, 11, and then went up to 17 years old. Right now, at research 4, if they're 14, 15, we win the cast or the brace, but at that time we continued. So it was a very long time with the conservative treatment, and they have really bad memories about that. They have really good memories about surgery. The worst memories were related to double approaches, for example, or the time that they have spent in the resuscitation room, or if they had complications, but mainly. And we were surprised that some of them could remember the Stagnata test, because we have to remember that in the 80s, neuromonitoring was not available for everybody. So we still we were still doing this Stagnata wake-up test in the middle of surgery, and some of them recalled. What we covered with these interviews was their condition, their health, overall health condition. We covered all the back issues, back health. We covered the imaging. We covered activity, how much activity they could do. We cover related conditions that they, health conditions that they had. And this approach was unique because right now, what we all use are prompts. So these are questions with multiple answers. In these interviews, we guide them through a 7-topic guide. So we have a path that we wanted to them to, you know, to go the interview through. And then what we analyze all those 100 patients to see what they have in common in their responses, in their answers. So it is very difficult to capture in prompts, for example, that I took my brace off when my mother was not watching, or sometimes I dream that I don't have scoliosis, or by the time I got surgery, I had a scholarship for being an engineer. I had to quit it, and then I ended up as a truck driver. So all those kind of things that we impact patients, we cannot identify with just multiple choice questions. That's, I think, the rich part of the study.
Yeah, I'd like to commend you for taking that approach. That's really challenging. You know, I think we get so caught up in using predetermined patient-reported outcome measures so that we can have something that we can statistically analyze and compare. But very often it really limits the kind of data that we can present. But then it's also really hard to write a paper about it, right? Because you have to go back and categorize this.
Yeah, that's right. We went through a lot of psychological papers using this methodology. But at the end, you have 100 patients, and you see that maybe 70% of the patients talk about low back pain. 70% maybe talk about that they have restrictions in activity, or they have back stiffness, or they feel some kind of stiffness when they move. Some of them talk that they had children. Some of them told us that they didn't have children because they were afraid of transmitting scoliosis to their children. Some of them are really concerned about the radiation exposure through all these years. And we found 3 of them having cancer, and they were wondering if radiation had something to do with this cancer. So again, these are things that you cannot capture in the SRS-22 or the ODI score. So
I had a quick question about the reinterventions. I think you said there were 7 patients who had reinterventions. Were those down the line? Were those like, you know, in the kind of perioperative period?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I feel that these 7 patients, yes, I remember that there were 2, just only 2 or 3 that we have to expand the diffusion down to the sacrum because they have degenerative problems and pain. But there were other patients that because of the they had a short fusion down to L1 or L2, and they had or degenerative problems far apart from the fusion, or spondylolisthesis, asymptomatic spondylolisthesis, that the main reason why they received a second operation. So there were some of them close related to the lung fusion, and some of them they weren't related to the fusion, to the lung fusion.
So it sounds like, yeah, the subset of patients who were unhappy, and you mentioned in the abstract that had long fusions, and then a subset of patients that had short fusions that were revised to long fusions that were also unhappy. So were there any sort of themes that came out in terms of who you could predict would fall into this unhappy or unsatisfied category?
Go ahead, Javier.
No, the thing is that all these different aspects that we're really worried about is LIV, number of mobile segments down below, degeneration by MRI. All this is going to be captured in a second step of this analysis. So these interviews didn't go only with the interview. We gave them all the prompts. We took new x-rays and we took new MRIs. And this is going to be the second step, analyzing the degen facets or degen discs, analyzing LIV, analyzing the tilt at the end, and analyzing SRS22, ODI scores, SF36. To try to answer these questions that we all have, should we do a selective fusion? Is good to have a residual asymmetry in the flank, but have more mobile segments in the future? Is it better to go down to L4 and have a perfect alignment or satisfaction with imaging and then see what happens to the L4? This is the second step that we're going to do. So this first step was to interview them and see how these 30 years have gone. Two-thirds of them were married. Two-thirds of them had offspring. 50% were engaged in physical activity, real good fixed physical activity. But on the other hand, 70% complained of back pain, of back stiffness, and they have appearance problems. So it's more a qualitative analysis.
Yeah, let me tell you that when exploring these patients, I didn't consider the length of the fusion. So especially when checking the mobility, of course, I realized that there were patients that they have more mobility than others, and I had the feeling that the long fusions are not a good thing for them. But at the time of interviewing them and considering their self-image and mobility, I didn't take into account the length of the lower instrument fusion. It was as a whole.
Great. Well, thanks to both of you for joining us. I know I had one more question maybe to round it out. I know, Javier, you have a lot of projects that are developing regarding long-term follow-up of spinal deformity patients, and this is just one small piece of that. You received a directed research grant earlier. Maybe you can kind of tell us how this project fits into the overall trajectory of projects that you have worked on and are working on in this field.
Well, this idea originated first in Barcelona, which is another center in Spain that we collaborate with them, with Ferran Pellicer and Antonio Matamalas, and we both centers got together in this first small project. It was also granted by the SRS with a small grant. So when the directed grant of long follow-up came out, we already had the experience of this first, let's say, pilot study on surgical patients. And we extended that also for conservative treated patients of 30 years and also comparing them to peers the same age. And then we extended from two centers to 13 and worldwide. So this is the first step. We are learning a lot with this first pilot study. And for sure, this will bring us information and the know-how for the next big study directed grant.
Wonderful, thank you. And it's great to see you and your mentor working together on this project. My senior partner, Larry Rinsky, just retired this year, and I'm hoping to continue to be involved with him in research projects for many years to come. So you're a great example.
Yeah, well, I always say that I learned from the best, and that he already had 30 years experience. So when I come in, I don't repeat the bad experiences that you do when you're young. And I'm a little old by my age, so I'm already 50, but my state of mind is 70 because I've gone with this very big guy beside me. And so I learned faster, I guess, from the bad experiences.
So I wanna end it saying that I'm very proud of receiving this award. But it represented a nice closing of my professional career. So actually, I received my highest award at the time I'm emeritus and active. And having the chance to meet my patients, those patients that I've operated on 30 years ago, and being able just to talk to them 30 years later. So this is an experience that I recommend to do to all Sarians if they are able just to do it, because the gain that you are receiving, this is a priceless. You can't read on in papers or in books the experience that you are receiving directly from your patient, that you know them, and they are happy just to share their experience in life with the surgeons. And I recognize that it's been a very hard task to do it, but likely enough, I did it. And I recommend if you, when you are older, if you have the chance just to repeat what we have done in our hospital, it's going to be priceless for all of you.
Great. Thank you. Sounds like an amazing experience. And thank you. Congratulations on the award. And thank you both for sharing this with us. I think it'll make us all better surgeons, and all of our patients will benefit. So I think we'll close it out. So thanks to all of our listeners and watchers to join us for another episode of Scoliosis Dialogues. And congratulations to our HIBSA Clinical Award winners this year.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us here. Thank you for the SRS and the award.
The Scoliosis Research Society is a nonprofit professional organization made up of physicians and allied health personnel. Their primary focus is on providing continuing medical education for healthcare professionals and on funding and supporting research in spinal deformity. Please visit srs.org for further information.